That was a piece from a larger work called Portraits of Langston by Valerie Coleman. And we heard the second movement, Danse Africaine. And it's a wonderful recent recording on CD Records, a Chicago label, featuring clarinetist Anthony McGill with his brother, flutist Demare McGill, and Mike McHale on piano. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, Anthony McGill will be in town Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock to perform and to talk about his career at the Dalton Center Recital Hall starting at 3 o'clock. He will be interviewed by the former leader of the School of Music, Bradley Wong, who is also a clarinetist of renown. Again, that's at FontanaMusic.org. It's the kind of concert you'll hear about on classical WMUK regularly. Also the kind of event you'll hear about in Encore magazine, which has a new expanded arts section that is featured this month in the October issue. And as promised, I have editor Marie Lee on the line with me this morning. Good morning on this Monday to you.
Oh, good morning, Kara.
Why don't we start there with the new arts section? I didn't think that you were like behind on arts reporting ever. There's always so much listed in the calendar and events of note. Tell me how you're thinking about this expansion.
Okay. Well, you know, we knew and watched through the pandemic as the arts organizations in our community, which are so vibrant and just, we have an unbelievable community. There's so much going on. But they, you know, they really experienced a huge decimation of their staff. A lot of them lost all their marketing communications people. Their budgets were slashed. And when we would talk to them about, you know, promoting their shows coming up as they were emerging from the pandemic, there's just no budget. And so we went to Kristen Chesick at the Arts Council. And for a long time, the Arts Council has been seeking a way to help the arts community promote itself better. The local media landscape had really changed for them about 10 years ago, and they weren't getting the kind of preview coverage or just stories about the art out there to people like they had been. And so when I talked to Kristen about, you know, what can we do in the short term, she was also about what can we do in the long term. And so in the short term, which is sort of our section that we've unveiled this month, it's being able to expand on what we would have had in the calendar. We still have them in the calendar, but what we would have done, because it just gives more information about the shows instead mm-hmm. of looking at the calendar and saying, oh, look, you know, University Theater is doing Into the Woods. We're actually able to tell you a little bit more about it. And so we've got dedicated pages where we're going to be doing that kind of coverage. It's interesting. We'd love to do stories and features, but we found that in our first run at this, in October, there was so much, it filled 6 pages without even trying.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So. Well, isn't that wonderful that so many things are coming back and getting scheduled?
Oh, my.
And you have that problem? It's a good problem to have.
And that's exactly right. I mean, I think when I first talked to Kristen about, you know, we were talking about, we wanted to launch in September, but we were given a grant from, in partnership with the Arts Council, we got a grant from the Irving S. Gilmore Foundation, but that didn't come through till the end of the summer, and so we weren't really ready to pop it off in September, so we did a soft unveiling in October. Our goal with the section is for it to expand so that we can have features and stories and do more things like that. And then the second phase of our expansion is to revamp our website so that there's more content about the arts on it, as well as reviews when we are able to start doing reviews.
Oh, good. That was my next question.
Okay.
The great thing about reviews is they travel. I mean, artists can use them as calling cards for their work. And the silence of reviews in publications and all media really, because they're some of the first writers to go when it's time to cut the budget. It's been hard. I think it's really brought attention to the fact that it's a necessary part of the sort of ecosystem of arts.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because reviews were Yelp before Yelp was Yelp, right? We live in a very much of a Yelp world where people want to know what other people are thinking or how they review something or see something. People are just so information curious. And one of the things that we found is, you know, and the review isn't necessarily about, like, you know, is it worth going or worth not going? It's more about, this is how they pulled it off. This is what the show looks like. This is, you know, this might be something for you. This might not be something for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we'll be hopefully going for. But I agree. I think that the arts, especially the performing arts community, they kind of are operating in a vacuum. You know, they get some audience feedback, but the performers don't have anything to take with them after the show that, like you said, they can use as a calling card.
And it's important to kind of know your reviewer. If you're lucky, you get to know their taste, mm-hmm. and you can judge it against your own taste. Whereas crowdsource reviews, it's a little too hard to know mm-hmm. what an anonymous person is recommending. So I like to get to know the names and the proclivities of my reviewers.
Right.
So I hope
You definitely want to know that they know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And we have some great reviewers, as WMUK knows, because you guys do reviews of shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think Gordon Bolar was one of the ones I listened to most recently. So, yeah, you know the value of that.
Well, Marie, let's move to the cover story. This is a look at how WMED, the School of Medicine here at Western Michigan University, is progressing with a brand new leader. I believe she's the dean, Paula Termulin.
She is, Dr. Paula Termulin, yeah.
Could you list a few things about why you thought this would be a good cover story, why West Michigan needed to be informed about the top level of WMED?
All right. I think WMED, the medical school, was one of the things when it first started, people were like, oh, that's nice. But I don't think they knew the impact that it could and would have on this community. WMED, as far as what they're looking to do in the community, they are very, very focused on producing a workforce that looks like the people that they will be serving. And ever since their inception, which was 10 years ago, that has been a focus, was to try to create an environment that was inclusive so that people that are underrepresented in the sciences and certainly in the medical field could come there and, you know, be educated in the medical sciences and go out and serve the world. The other thing I think that was interesting about why we thought Paula was a good choice is she's really fortunate in her taking on this position after Dean Hal Jensen had been in it for 10 years. Because like she said, the messy stuff is over. And now I have the opportunity to really craft our future and our vision. And the future and the vision that she sees is very much one where the school serves the community and is producing those doctors, as she calls them, the doctor in the corner, the doctors that most of us will be seeing, the ones that are going to be serving as general physicians. And so we loved the fact that she came from a program that had a really strong training program in the Native American realm. They have staff and faculty that are Native American that are now training physicians to Native American physicians, because where she came from in Minnesota has a very high population of Native Americans. And so the school that she was working at before, which was University of Minnesota's Medical School at Duluth, that was their emphasis. And so she brings that experience to Kalamazoo, and where it's going to go from there, I think, is going to be fascinating to watch.
Also, it's a school that earned or that was given a huge gift in June. And I think a big question for those of us who heard about it is just, what are they going to do with it? You know, how are they moving forward? So it's nice to touch base with that as well, and how she's, you know, as the leader, kind of putting the focus, as you said, on making sure that people of different ethnicities and races are given the tools to become medical professionals and serve the world, like you said. Yeah.
Right. Well, one of the things Paula told me about that gift, the $300 million that was earmarked for the medical school, a large portion of that is earmarked for scholarships. And what was fascinating about, what I really loved it was when Paula told me that she just paid off her student loans for medical school. The woman is 58, and she just paid them off. And so that tells you just what kind of a financial burden it is to be able to go to medical school, which is why, you know, medical school isn't something that a lot of people in the underrepresented ethnicities and races consider because of the cost. And so the gift that they got, the $300 million, much of it is earmarked to be able to offset those costs so that they can attract and recruit the kind of people that they want to attract and recruit, and also create a workforce of faculty and staff that, you know, come from different ethnicities and backgrounds so that they can train the future physicians, you know, what they... to represent that or to work with those populations. And so, you know, I mean, it's really nice to think about going into a job and knowing that you got this big, huge gift right, you know, right as you started. But as Dr. Ed Montgomery at WMU told me, he said it really was a vote of confidence. It was like, we like where this is going and we need to keep going in this direction.
Hmm. I am speaking with the editor of Encore magazine, Marie Lee. 5 minutes ago, we were talking about arts expansion coverage, and now we're talking about the medical school at Western Michigan University. You love your job. There's so many different things to report on and talk about in West Michigan. We should move on to perhaps a Maggie Drew's story about a club that has its origins way back when most women were expected to stay home.
Exactly. And I think it was interesting to have Maggie write the story because, you know, Maggie is an intern from Western Michigan University. Oh. And so when she was assigned this story, she's kind of like, you know, they needed groups like this. It's like, oh, the youth. Yeah, our youth. But yeah, I think what's fascinating is we all heard the phrase, I mean, not all of us. She certainly hadn't. But like, you know, doorbell rings and somebody says, welcome wagon. And it's like, what is a welcome wagon? Well, that's what the Kalamazoo Area Newcomers Club basically started at as 80 years ago. It was like a hostess service where new people that came into town, somebody would go out and greet them and tell them all about the community. And what the founder found was that it was nice for these people to get information about, you know, places to shop or, you know, places to go. But they really, these women that had moved into a new community, probably as trailing spouses for their husband's jobs, really needed connection with other women. And so that hasn't changed, that need to be connected to other women. So that's really what they've evolved into as an organization now that's fostering friendships and connections between women who are either new to the community or have been in the community forever. So some of them have been members for, you know, 20 years.
Oh, my. And they're still reaching out to newcomers? The Newcomers Club, Kalamazoo Newcomers Club.
I think the newcomers might be a little bit of a misnomer because he actually said, you know, some of the people that the club has been attracting have really been women who are recently retired.
Ah.
Or have gone through divorces or are widowed, and they need to forge new connections.
Right.
And what they ended up doing is the newcomers group also formed several smaller groups within for like their, you know, their special interests. So like there's a gardening group, there's book clubs, and it was a way for them to meet people that had the same kind of interests that they had, and connect, because a lot of times that's hard to do, especially if you've been working, as you know, if you've been working for a long, long time and you're recently retired, sometimes it's like, what do I do now? Where do I go? How do I find people to hang out with? Since, you know, that was your life for 40 years working.
I'm raising my hand. I had no idea there was a Kalamazoo Newcomers Club, brand new to me, been around for 80 years. Wow. Really neat. You're so adept at uncovering corners that I just didn't know existed in our region whatsoever. And it sounds like Maggie had a good time fleshing this out and learning the whole history of it.
Oh, yeah. I think it was definitely, it was really educational for her, too, I think, because as a modern woman whose parents both work, you know, her mother works. And so, you know, that would never occur to her. And it's like when we were looking through the books, they brought in these big scrapbooks with all the articles and stuff that have been done on it over the years. And like the picture that appears on page 14 is women having tea. And she was like, is that a thing? And it was like, it was a thing, you know, it might still be, but, you know. And so it's also really interesting to see how women have evolved, but yet the need for the connection and friendships has stayed the same.
The focus on craft brewing continued in Encore this month with, yes, John Liberty taking an updated look at three places: Final Gravity, new moves there, Tantric Brewing, and Warner Vineyards, adding beer to the menu. That's rather nice of them. So there's that update. And just in time for Halloween, a look at Five Faves.
I'm sorry. I think that Lynn Houghton and I must be like twin sisters from different mothers, because I have the same fascination with cemeteries that she does. And I know that some people are just like, that's just morbid. Like, no, they're beautiful. They're just beautiful spaces. And they have stories. And I guess that's just it. I always see the stories. And so Lynn has been basically traveling around all of Kalamazoo County, documenting the cemeteries, you know, discovering the histories behind them. And she found some great stories about five of the cemeteries in our county that just, they were fascinating. Especially the one, the Oak Grove Cemetery, where there's a mausoleum for William Hill, and there's a room for 11, but only William is in it. And his wife is buried elsewhere in the cemetery. And you just say, there's a story there. I want to know that story.
Well, that is, you know, your purpose in life. I got to find
it. Yeah, my sister's... My sisters say I'm just nosy, but I think it's something else.
Marie Lee is the editor of Encore magazine, and October's issue covers five local cemeteries that do have good stories behind them and are fascinating places to visit. And finally, we'll talk about the back page story. A gentleman named Roger Parsick, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And... yeah. Yes, I loved. I loved this. This is a really humanizing article.
Well, you know, so Roger was actually written about in Encore way back when he first started the store, which would have been back in I can't remember now, 87, 92, I think it was.
Failed to mention what it was. It's Heritage Company, architectural right. Salvage and Supply. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's another one of those places that probably for Lynn and I wandering through is like, you know, fascinating. But I love the fact that he really single-handedly has saved a lot. He can't save the buildings, but he's saved a lot of artifacts and pieces of buildings that people then can use in their own homes or structures from buildings that would have been torn down. And so, you know, I loved how he got involved with it as a student in D.C. trying to save a building and, you know, came up here and started the store. And if you've ever wandered through it, if you own an old house or even if you just like old house stuff and want to get something, you know, that's unique and different, wandering through there, it can take you a day. It's not that big of a store, but it can take you a day because there's so much there. There's so much there. And so, his story is, you know, I love the fact that it was like nobody's really in this for the money. You're in it because you love this kind of stuff. You love salvaging parts of houses and buildings that people can reuse.
He's an unusual person for that. His passion isn't necessarily to acquire wealth and retire. It's to constantly take care of old things and make sure they're not put in a landfill. Beautiful features.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, walking through Heritage Company does make me think, maybe I should just put a door in this wall, because that's such a that's such a crazy cool door. Or
I love what some people have seen. Some people have some amazing things with things that they found there. If you go down to if you're allowed to go down to Black Owl Cafe, on the second floor, the owner Darren, he put in a wall of doors, and it makes a great wall because those doors are solid wood, and so one whole wall is just composed of doors. And I was like, that is ingenious, but that is a great way. I mean, it's amazing too. I think the people that love this kind of stuff are also incredibly creative because they can think of ways to reuse this material. And he makes it really easy. I went down there to get a piece of molding for my house, because I have a house that's 80 years old. And I showed him what it looked like, and he was like able to walk to this long display of pieces of molding and find the exact piece.
Mm.
It was crazy. And I was like, because otherwise you'd have to have it custom milled. And so, and it doesn't even have to be old houses. A lot of people could find a lot of beautiful new things, are beautiful things to put into new structures that, are just solid, wonderful pieces.
I love also that he wanted to talk about his family and how it works, and how, he has a nearly 40-year marriage and two kids, and he'd like to talk about how he fits in with his own family and makes it all work. That was really endearing. I won't give you any more details so people will go out and look up this edition of Encore, but I loved that about it. Roger Parsick, featured in Encore magazine this month, October. You'll find it online at EncoreKalamazoo.com or in print at a number of locations around Kalamazoo. You can also subscribe and have it sent to your house. Finally, Marie, I just did some math when I looked up your letter from the editor, and I see that Encore turns 50 next year.
It does.
Are you making any plans?
We are making some plans. We're looking at some different editorial options that we might consider doing every month, like update pieces on stories we've done in the past. I think the thing is, we have so much content. 50 years of magazines is a lot of content. And so we're coming up with some creative ideas, I think, for how we can celebrate the past and acknowledge the fact that we have survived this long. And, that's no easy feat, I am sure.
I'm just brainstorming, but how about an art hop exhibit of front covers over the years?
Oh my gosh, that's a great idea.
Do it.
I'll write that. That would be easier to do. I agree. And I think another thing people really, really miss was created by Phil Schubert, the man that started Encore and then carried on for a while under the Briscoes. I purchased Encore and good Lord, on Halloween 10 years ago. So my own anniversary is coming up here. But one of the things that people really miss are the guess who. And so, there's been some talk about, can we resurrect that? Should we resurrect that? So we've got a lot of talk going on, but I'd love to hear people's input. I'd love to hear how they think we should, observe our 50th year.
Well, we'll have to put out that appeal right now. Hope you get some feedback. And I really appreciate talking to you again this month, Marie. And we'll talk again about the November issue. And thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Sarah. I appreciate it.
Okay. We're going to move on with a little bit of Bernstein from the Fancy Free Ballet, here transcribed for solo piano and played with a lot of style by Dag Achatz, a Swedish soloist here.